Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Connor Newt here with you on this Monday morning. Live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. We will have Corey Curtis from News 2 coming up at 8 o'clock. We'll get his thoughts on the Vols, all things Titans, as well as minicamp is coming. And we've got training camp right around the corner. So we'll get Corey Curtis's thoughts on that a little bit later in the program. So, Joe, the House settlement, which we have discussed a little bit and that we've known is coming in the world of college sports for a while now, has now happened, and a federal judge has approved the terms of basically what amounts to about a $2.8 billion antitrust settlement. So, just for clarification, the House settlement has nothing to do with the House of Representatives. So I just want to clear that out there.
In the lawsuit.
It is an actual person in the lawsuit. So let's just start there. Joe, I've had a lot of people ask, okay, what is this? What does it actually mean for me, a college sports fan? So let's just start there. What, in kind of in layman's terms, does the House settlement mean for college athletics? If you're a college athletics, college sports, college football fan, why should you care? And what will this change as we move forward here in terms of the landscape of college sports and how things are set up?
What does it mean for you? Whoever your favorite team is, you need to go find the little QR code and start donating, okay? They need your money right now. They need all your money. Look, it means that schools are paying athletes. So we had all these statements Friday when the judge, Claudia Wilkin, who she's presided over a lot of these cases out of California, federal judge, including the big case in 2014, Ed O'Bannon from UCLA. That's the big one that started the whole thing rolling on. Oh, yeah, actually, this is a big cartel that has free labor and should not be allowed to restrict people from making money. So all these people, Sankey and all the commissioners and Charlie Baker, then say, like, this is a huge monumental day. And look, technically it is, because technically now it just means that schools are actually paying their athletes. So in technically speaking, it's this huge deal because it's not just the NIL coming from outside income. It's actually schools paying the athletes. How big of a deal is it for the college sports fan? I don't know where it's going. I don't think that the things that they've put in place to go with this are going to work at all, and that's just me. And some people disagree, and I've talked to some people in college sports who think that they're going to be able to cap the money and it's going to work and they're going to – it's just I don't buy it at all. I think that you're still going to have extra money on the outside as these top programs pursue the top players. Because now the schools have $20.5 million, basically,
yep.
and they're going to split it up among their athletes. So what does that bring? Well, first of all, one thing that definitely changes here, I guess it's not totally different because you had the collectives had the same idea. You talked about it as a Tennessee fan, Robbie, right? It's like, I mean, when it comes down to it, I want, you know, good basketball teams, I want a good baseball team, but better not sacrifice football money for that stuff.
Yep.
You know, so now you have coaches. I mean, I know at Auburn, talking to those coaches during March as they're making their run. It's like, yeah, it's about to get real intense and competitive because they have a championship program, but also Auburn football is trying to get back on its feet. So are there 2 or 3 or 4 million that are up in the air between one of those programs? And how does that get sorted out? And then how much are you paying your other athletes, you know? I mean, it's a settlement, but it's not going to stop, to me. It's not going to stop lawsuits. There's going to be more lawsuits, especially because they have Deloitte now in charge of this. They have this College Sports Commission, which is supposed to really bring enforcement now and really be able to enforce the rules, and they're going to look at these NIL deals, and if they're not real NIL deals, okay, like really you're doing something for a product and right. getting paid – and if it's deemed as actual just pay for play, then it's going to get rejected. I don't see how it works. Again, I've talked to some people who are like, I swear, It was really impressive with Deloitte and all the stuff they did. And I think, you know, everybody wants this to be capped. Everybody wants it to be controlled. So we're all going to hold each other accountable. I just don't buy it.
It's kind of a laughable statement. Yeah.
I mean, it is. I mean, so, you know, well, people are hopeful, but when it comes down to it, I think it's just the latest stop on the way to what has to happen, which is some sort of collective bargaining. But the NCAA, I mean, they, people are just fighting that until they're going to fight. They're going to die on the hill. They're going to fight it all the way to the end until it inevitably happens.
Well, there's a line here from an AP article that's interesting that says, quote, the defendant conferences, talking about the ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, SEC, Pac-12, are creating an enforcement arm that is essentially taking over for the NCAA, which used to police recruiting violations and the like. Among this new entity's biggest functions is to analyze third-party deals, which you just talked about, worth $600 or more, to make sure they're paying players for an appropriate market value. The problem with that is, Joe, as you pointed out, the holding each other accountable part of this, it's like, okay, so you guys have, for the history of time, been looking for every possible competitive advantage that you can possibly get, be that in football, basketball, baseball, whatever. And now we're supposed to sit here and believe that for the greater good, you're all going to come together and say, well, we know that we could land such and such recruit over here. But it would really not be the traditional NIL sense. It's basically pay for play. And we've already reached our money on the $20.5 million. So what we're going to do is, instead of recruiting this guy, we're just going to throw our hands up in the air and we're going to say, well, we just don't quite have the money, don't have the funds, don't have the NIL deals to make this happen. So you can go play for Alabama instead of Tennessee.
Right.
Like, do we actually believe that's going to happen? Because I don't.
No. Now, again, do you get to the point, like if you have collective bargaining, that's where it gets interesting. I mean, why in the NFL are people essentially okay with parity? You know, I mean, you're trying to run a profitable business.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the NFL, it's like everybody kind of agrees on the rules and stays within them. I have one I've said before, like, did Robert Kraft quietly put away a little fun for Tom Brady over those years when he's taken less and everything like that, you know, like stuff like that. But you know, again, that's collectively bargained money, and it's all to, I mean, here's the parameters. It's just, that's also with 32 teams, you know?
And well, it's 32
that's,
teams.
And that's the problem.
It's way less players. The players have a union. Like, there's a lot of things
right.
about professional sports that organize it. And this is just so difficult to organize right now because, like you said, the lawsuits just keep coming, and these players keep winning. And they just keep – I mean, the courts have basically told you, hey, we're not capping their earning potential. So when that's the case, it makes it really difficult to come up with a solution like that here.
Which is why, again, you know, we had the thing with the schools agreeing not to sue. Great. The schools suing is not the issue. I never understood why – and again, Ross Dellinger does a really good job for Yahoo, and he had that story, but he's like, this is groundbreaking. I'm like, is it? I'm not worried about schools suing. I'm worried about the first time Deloitte says, no, sorry, this NIL deal doesn't rise to the standard. You're right. Not doing enough card signings. Okay, you talk to my lawyer. What?
Yeah.
I'm getting the money. It's just, I don't think it's going to work at all, that aspect of it. And look, I am worried that now that we get to this point, first of all, and I think a lot of people out there who are parents, I mean, a lot of people get hurt by this. That includes kids who are getting recruited right now. There are way fewer opportunities for high school athletes. The walk-on situation is squeezed. And the non-revenue sports, you definitely worry about that. Look, the Olympics in this country – and our success in the Olympics has so much to owe to college athletics and these Olympic sports programs that develop in Tennessee alone. Tennessee has produced several top track athletes. You look at the swimming athletes from different places, I mean, gymnastics, all across the board. It's kind of been a free feeder system.
Yep.
Just like college football has been a free minor league system for the NFL.
Right.
And I do worry about, when it comes down to it, as we move forward, the decisions get tougher and tougher, and it's just like sport cutting galore. I hope it doesn't happen, and you know, I know a lot of people want it to not happen or working to try to make it not happen, but when it comes down to choices, what are these schools going to pick? They're going to pick football, and they're going to pick men's basketball, and, you know, maybe women's basketball, softball, baseball, whatever is hockey, you know, whatever is important to that particular school. But then you get a lot of other sports that could be in danger.
Another thing that's going to be interesting to see out of this is, like, does it ever get to the point where you start considering the athletes as, like, flat out just employees of the school, which to this point, not very many people want to see happen. You know, you had, I think it was Danny White, and the AP article brings this up. Danny White talked about collective bargaining and how that could really solve a lot of the problems there.
Yeah.
But really, in order to get to the collective bargaining part of it, it's hard to get. I mean, you can, there are a couple ways you could get there. It's hard to get there, though, as he's pointed out, without athletes just being considered employees and having that part of it wrapped up. And to this point, the NCAA for sure and a lot of schools have said, yeah, no thanks. We don't want the athletes to be employees.
Yeah, no, they're fighting it tooth and nail. And look, I'm not smart enough to get into the nitty-gritty on that. I've heard, you know, the idea that, if you make them employees, there are unintended consequences that would especially with, like, these other sports and the opportunities. I mean, I could see it getting a lot worse for them. So I'm sensitive to that. I've heard some lawyers talk about you can do collective bargaining as more of like a contract laborer, right? Instead of a full-on employment status. Is there a way to make that work? You know, again, you know, like it's been pointed out on our show, Chris Vanini came on our show and was talking about, okay, so in the NFL you have, yeah, obviously you have long-term players who serve as, like, the union reps and stuff. This is a much shorter-term thing. But I also think, you know, the NFL also elects someone to be the head of the NFLPA. Why couldn't Diego Pavia, when he's done playing at 37, have that be, like, a paying job? You know what I mean? I mean, there's ways you can figure this out. Unless the labor here, the people making the money, have a say in the capping of the money that these people are trying to do for them, I don't think judges are going to be okay with it.
Got a lot of your thoughts to get to on this. We'll do that next. 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. Your reaction to the House settlement and what this means and potentially could mean for the future of college sports. More on that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. I got some tickets to give away. A pair of tickets to Holiday World and Splash and Safari in Santa Claus, Indiana. Make a splash this summer at the water coaster capital of the world. Take your family to Holiday World and Splash and Safari, just a short drive away. Get tickets at holidayworld.com. Be caller 5, 615-737-1025. Caller 5 will win a pair of tickets to Holiday World and Splash and Safari, which I've been to several times. It's a lovely place, Joe.
Jay Cutler's hometown.
Yep. It's a... I've an interesting place.
I don't think I've ever been to Santa Claus.
Really?
No.
Okay. Maybe we'll change that. Last week,
maybe
you had the opportunity to go to the Little Baby concert, and now you've got the opportunity to go to Holiday World.
A Rex Road went to Little Baby. I'll make sure at least one Rex Road goes to Holiday World.
Taking
may not be me.
615-737-1025. Brandon on the YouTube chat says, $20 million, nothing compared to the benefits package and insurance cost if you make athletes employees, which is a good point and an interesting one to bring up, and part of the pushback from the NCAA and the schools on that front.
Yeah, no, I'm glad he brought it up, because that's definitely one of the things. That's why if you do contract labor and it's just, and you're just talking about the compensation and you can collectively bargain, but you can not have things like that, then maybe, you know, I think you can probably, frankly, save more sports doing it that way. Ed asks, would the cap be per school or by sport? So the schools can spend up to, I think it's $20.5 million. It's right around there. They can spend up to that. They can divvy it up however they want. Now, again, then you get into, you know, there certainly have been people that say, well, if you're not going to do it equal, what about Title IX? I think there's going to be lawsuits that are going to generate from this either way. I think that, you know, I think that this is protected in terms of the Title IX aspect of it. Like you can pay people, you know, it's you can pay people based on like money brought in. You can justify it, but it doesn't mean you won't get sued for it. And I have no idea the outcomes of lawsuits. I think any side of this, if you tried to do it equally, you'd get sued. If you don't do it equally, which they won't do, you'll get sued. If you try to limit them, Deloitte comes in and says, nope, this NIL deal is not real. You can't have that money. You're going to get sued.
Yeah, it's going to be – that part of it is going to be really interesting to see like how they navigate all that. Remington on the text line says, NIL has totally hurt my love for college football. It just doesn't feel the same. Throwing the playoff, just hoping I can get used to the new normal. This is from Remington on the text line. And to that point, the enforcing of NIL is going to be interesting here, as you pointed out. Because like the idea that they're going to say, all right, well, this meets the standard of NIL, but this really doesn't meet the standard of NIL, and trying to hold everybody accountable to that, it seems like a really hard thing to do. Because, like, honestly, like if you're the collectives or even some of these schools that get involved and want to structure the NIL, like there are ways that you could structure it where it's just like, yeah, show up to this one thing and that's what we want you to do.
Well, in the early days of NIL, that's what, remember, it was always like, yeah, you know, Nico's got to do some, and he did. They did have Nico. They did have him signed up for appearances, which apparently he didn't show up for all of them.
Yeah.
But, and then basically in the last like year or two, it's kind of just been like, yeah, here's our payroll. This is what we're paying our, I mean, it's just,
yeah.
Like, you talk to coaches, if you talk to, like, a football or a basketball coach, like, just, like, off the record, I mean, it's – they know exactly who's making what, and that's what it is. It's a salary to play for them. It's what it is. We all know it's what it is, okay?
Yeah.
They have payrolls. I mean, it's like, well, this guy, yeah, I'm not paying this guy. I've heard coaches say, again, off-the-record conversations, which, you know, never would name or the player, but it's like, nah, I'm not paying that guy $300K. No way. He's not getting more than $200K. That's how they're talking about it. That's what it is. And we all know it's what it is. And so, again, we have these people in the NCAA. And I think Charlie Baker is, you know, I think he's got a better handle on things than his predecessor. But it's still like.
Not hard.
Yeah, right. It's not hard to outpace Mark Emmert in the brain twister.
Boy, that guy had some doozies.
Oh, man. But it's still like fundamentally, how do you guys figure this is going to work? What they're still praying for,
yeah,
is an antitrust exemption. They're praying for government interference to save them, you know? And look, when it comes down to it, let's be real. Over all these years, college athletics, as the money has exploded, which really comes down to in the 80s, Supreme Court, and we got to the point where all the games could be on TV, right? Like, I think it's 1984 case. That's a big moment in college athletics. They've had nonprofit status from the federal government through all this stuff. It's a huge part of. And why? Because they offer these opportunities to the sports. That's why there's a limit. That's why there's a minimum number of, I think it's 16 sports that you must offer. Those opportunities are the trade-off for having nonprofit exemption, right? And we all know the people running these programs, coaching at the top, are making millions. And it's a billion-plus-dollar industry. So they've had a lot of protection from the federal government. But now they're hoping for this blanket antitrust exemption. And I just – who knows what's going to happen, man? I mean, I can't predict what's going to happen from the federal government.
No.
But I think that's – usually it ends up being a lot of noise and then nothing.
Jason in Goodsville says, I see smaller D1 schools litigating at some point. SEC and Big Ten rush to grab schools are getting bigger and bigger pieces of the money. The feds will break up a monopoly. It's from JC and Gillettsville on the text line, talking about maybe smaller D1 schools trying to sue and get in there. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, that's the thing with the way it is right now. I mean, we all know that the SEC and the Big Ten, number one, are the huge money drivers, which is, by the way, why they're doing all this in terms of trying to get the automatic bids and the automatic qualifiers and all that stuff, is because they know that they're the biggest leagues, and they drive the revenue, and they drive the money, and they feel like they should be compensated for that, both monetarily and also in their value of postseason spots, particularly in college football. So that's why we're there. I don't know that we're anywhere close to like that changing anytime soon as it relates to the SEC and the Big Ten, particularly in college football.
Yeah, yeah. Look, there's going to be some kind of, and there already is. We're kind of in the process of a breakaway, right?
Yeah.
because one of the big problems in college athletics has been they're trying to make these rules that apply to everybody. So there's such huge, and that's why the power schools like we're a totally different level of income and all that. Like, we need our own rules, and that's what we're kind of seeing. I mean, what I obviously hope we don't see, and I know some people think it's inevitable. I don't think it's inevitable. This idea, like the SEC and Big Ten will
break away,
do their own mini NFL. To me, that would be if you just cut out swaths of the country, I think you're going to kill your not kill it, but you're going to hurt it. It's going to be less over time valuable if you don't involve the whole country. That's what I believe. I can't prove it, but I believe it. So I hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah, what's a national championship mean at that point?
Exactly. Right. Like, you aren't the only – like, there are still – again, there are still other conferences. Even if they have less money than you, I mean, look in baseball. The biggest payrolls always win? No, sometimes they're overwhelming. The Dodgers are pretty inevitable this year, but they don't always win. And sometimes big payrolls are terrible. Those teams are terrible. And like, look at the Mets in recent years. And sometimes the small market teams win it all, like Kansas City did not that long ago. Texter says, will NIL become the equivalent of endorsements at the pro level that has little regulation to draw in better players? That's the thing. I mean, NIL, to me, again, it was like the Olympic model. It's like, great. They can just, if you're, you know, again, Cooper Flagg last year made way more money. Duke didn't even pay him that much, is my understanding, because it was like, yeah, this dude's got crazy endorsements.
Right.
He's fine. I mean,
same thing apparently with Arch Manning. Apparently he's just got an unbelievable amount of endorsements.
So some of these athletes, even at that age, and it's great that they can do that, right? We used to restrict that. It used to be, Johnny Manziel, did you sign that poster? You know, it's like, what are we doing? We're chasing kids around here that people want to pay $5 for the autograph. But the problem is, of course, any sort of opening to where you can pay someone, now everybody's going to be, they're going to be competing and trying to pay them to play for them. So you just have to, acknowledge that, and we have to get to the point where, to me, with collective bargaining, now you can have multi-year deals. People who are sick of this stuff, I believe it's really about player movement. I mean, some of you may be offended that they're getting money. I can't imagine now why.
I don't think a ton of people
care about that. I don't think a ton of people do either. But it's the movement. It's, oh my God, so this guy on our team that I really liked, he's playing for Arkansas this year? That sucks. And I get that. And I do think long-term, that has a potential to hurt fan interest.
I totally agree with that. 615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your thoughts to get to on the House settlement, plus some news in the NFL and the AFC South, and some breaking news that just happened in the NFL, which we'll get to as well, coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. This week's Nashville's Best Deal is Staley's Chicago Italian Dining, one of Nashville's best-kept secrets and winners of numerous best-of awards. Enjoy authentic Italian beef sandwiches, Vienna Chicago Dogs, and the best Euro south of Chicago. Get half off a $20 gift card while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon, big bank muscle, small bank hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. We'll have the Rob Rant coming up at 7:45. Corey Curtis from News 2 will be with us at 8 o'clock for his weekly visit, so looking forward to that. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Joe, just a couple other thoughts on the House settlement front. Ethan from Lawrenceburg says, you shouldn't be able to quote-unquote play for five different schools in 4 years. That is where I think most – we talked earlier about the fan part of this, because I think a lot of fans here, they hear like, well, the House settlement's coming, and they're like, well, great, what is that? Like, what does that mean, and what does it have to do with me? Why should I care? To me, this is where, like, if you want to solve the fan part of this, this is where that conversation almost begins and ends to me. Like, you've got to find a way to really litigate the transfer portal, whether it's the windows, which I think there are too many of them right now, particularly in college football, or, like, just the amount of times you can transfer. Like, I think the old way of doing things was stupid, where like if you wanted to transfer ever, you had to sit out a year. Like, I think it was dumb. But I also think that this is dumb. Like, there's a middle ground between having to sit out a year for transferring anywhere one time, or you can transfer as much as you want, as often as you want, and there's no penalty to it whatsoever. Like, there's got to be some sort of middle ground there, which, again, clearly has been difficult to figure out, but they got to figure that out at some point.
Yeah, I think, like, if we take any of this stuff and we just think of it like jobs, you know, like any of us, because look, like it or not, and I've said this before, but like if I was 18 to 22 and had anywhere close to this kind of money, I probably wouldn't make all good choices. Okay. But that's the reality. It's what it is. And
be a lot of Five Guys burgers and fries.
Yeah.
Back in my day.
Yeah. But like getting all the extras and stuff. Yeah.
It's expensive now though.
I know.
Everything is. Even eggs. But that's a story for another day. But
detrimental to you and Kuharski's egging business.
I know. We'll get it going someday. You know, look, they're gonna get this money and you know, hopefully, again, they're helped and they put it away and they have seed money for their life, and it is possible that, I mean, let's face it. If you were an athlete at this level, and we're talking about the top athletes, right? But if you had a chance, but maybe you're not a pro. There's a ton of great college athletes who aren't going to be significant pro athletes. Most of them, the vast majority, even the really good ones, aren't going to have pro careers that make them that much money. So again, this is their opportunity in life to like make that money. They shouldn't be denied that. And so you think about it in terms of jobs. They also we're allowed to go. I mean, I guess in this industry, you have non-competes and you have like little time periods where you have to sit or whatever. But like on the writing side of things, there's nothing like that. You can go switch from job to job all you want, right? But that's why also then you have contracts.
Yep.
And that's all it has to be. The argument that coaches move around whenever they want, that's very true. But they have buyouts that they have to pay, and there are multi-year deals. And that's it. That's the answer. So I think at least to have like a 2-year deal. So, you know, you're going to, okay, so you know that you have this athlete for 2 years in your program. I think that would help. And yes, look, you know, the transfer fee someone brings up, you know, if you look at it like soccer, there's also that stuff. Like there should be some sort of ability to recoup.
Yep.
And this is when you think about like the lower level schools. Think about Belmont basketball and how much supplying of high major programs it has done in recent years. Belmont basketball should be getting like money back or something, right? For that, if it's going to be this total free for all, or if you have the ability to have a contract, then you know you have someone for 2 years. I don't know that you can do more than 2 years. I guess you could do. I mean, Nico signed a 4-year deal, but. Also,
then work
left. Yeah, then just left. That's the thing, you know. So this, if you have this more professionalized, which is what it's already doing, and just get it to the point where the laborers, the athletes, their representation has a say in the making of it, I think that you can slow the movement down.
Well, on the NFL front, some news in the AFC South. Nick Chubb expected to sign a 1-year deal with the Houston Texans today. So Chubb suffered, obviously, a really bad knee injury, I think in the second week back in 2023, and he missed the rest of that year. He came back last year. He missed the first 6 games of last season, still rehabbing from the knee. Got back in with the Browns, did not really look the same, and then he broke his foot in week 15. So you're obviously talking about, in Nick Chubb's case, a guy that has been through a lot of injuries in his career. He's 29 years old. I was telling you before the break, you could have told me Nick Chubb was 34, and I'd have been like, yep, sounds about right. He's 29 years old. He's had a lot of injuries. You know, obviously the Texans already have Joe Mixon, and they've got a pretty decent running back room. Like Damian Pierce is in there too. So I don't know that it's a guarantee that Chubb is going to make the team. And if he does, what sort of a role is he going to play? But like if he's totally healthy now and he's back to – maybe he never gets back to being that Nick Chubb, but if he's – totally healthy and the injuries are behind him, I do wonder what he could do for the Texans at age 29 coming into an already pretty good running back room.
Yeah, it's worth a shot. It's definitely – I don't hate the idea at all from the Texans' perspective. I can't tell you that I'm all that optimistic. I think Nick Chubb right now looks like he's going to be the classic example of a running back who you can be great for a period of time. And we had arguments on this show – not that long ago, who's a better back, Nick Chubb or Derrick Henry?
Yep.
It was that.
Seems laughable now.
Right. But that's – and then the injuries hit you and your career goes the other way real fast. So I don't know that this is going to be some groundbreaking move, but it's worth a shot. If he's past that stuff, I think he – obviously the guy can play. Very good player.
The Packers have released Jaire Alexander. So they had been working through some things all offseason. He's obviously their star cornerback who has been injury-riddled the last 2 years. They were working through some things, including, I think, trying to get him to take a pay cut. And then ultimately, it looked like he was coming back. And now, after the draft and after free agency, he has been released. So Jaire Alexander is out there. I would not look at that if I'm the Titans. I know that there's some uncertainty with L'Jarius Sneed and what all is going to happen there. I don't know that I would mess with Jaire Alexander if I'm the Titans. I'd probably leave that one alone.
You've already yelled today at a Vanderbilt fan. As a Tennessee fan, screaming at a Vanderbilt fan?
It's true.
Do you have any, you know, do you want to let anything out as a Packers fan about Jaire Alexander? I mean, I know you got your rant coming up, too.
I'm kind of glad that he's gone, to be honest with you. Okay. So
you're happy. This is good.
It's really kind of a great day. Like, oh, good. He's not there anymore.
Stress-free Monday.
Yeah, kind of awesome at that point. So.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, he did. He looked. He had one pretty good moment last year when Will Levis hit him right in stride for a pick six here in Nashville, which I was like, wow, what exactly is Will Levis looking at there? He threw it right to him. Unbelievable. That's about all Jaire Alexander did last year, though.
So, as I recall.
Titans got to see it.
As I recall, that was pretty good recognition and anticipation from Jaire Alexander. I'm just saying.
I'm surprised he didn't drop it. He's like stunned that the ball came there. He's like, wow, this quarterback threw that ball, huh? How about that? Good stuff.
Will Levis' greatest hits.
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers has signed the contract, Joe. The picture came out over the weekend. Apparently he's got a wedding ring on, which is throwing people for a tizzy on that one. Press conference coming up tomorrow. Which, anytime you get an Aaron Rodgers press conference, it could be fascinating. So, that saga has come to an end. He's going to be in there for minicamp, and we'll see what sort of team they got. But the deal is done. It has been signed, and I can't remember exactly what the numbers are. I'll look it up here. Not a very expensive contract, though, for the Pittsburgh Steelers on the Aaron Rodgers front. It turns out, apparently, he wasn't lying when he said he would play for around $10 million. I think he's got some escalators in there that can get it up to, like, 19.
I was going to say.
It's like a $10 million base deal.
Interesting. Yeah. That tells me that, I mean, look, you know, he's
13.65.
Yeah. And then you got a lot of incentive. I figured there'd be, you know,
$10 million guaranteed and could be worth up to $19.5 million. So $10 million guaranteed money.
Okay. Well, is he?
I mean, four quarterbacks, that's a pretty good price for Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. Is he still playing to get attention, or is he just seeing if he can try to snag a ring at the end? I don't know. If you're him, I don't know how. If you look at that team and think we could win a ring. But I guess if you think a lot of yourself and think that you still have, like, a great, great season in you, you could make the case for elevating that
team. I think he's got a lot of respect for Mike Tomlin. Him and Mike Tomlin have always gotten along. You do have Metcalf there. You got T.J. Watt there. So you look at – I mean, there's some star power. I said this the other day. I still think they're probably the third best team in their division. That doesn't mean you can't make the playoffs, so we'll see what happens on that front. But he can say whatever he wants, and I don't doubt that there's, you know, he's talked about having something going on in his personal life. I'm sure that's happened. I tend to be more with, like, Charles and some of these other people that wonder, was he just waiting as long as he could possibly wait to see what happened with Minnesota? Because I think deep down that's probably where he wanted to go, was Minnesota, and it just didn't work.
Yeah, that makes sense. And Minnesota, what they did last year with Sam Darnold, especially if you don't have a high opinion of Sam Darnold and you're Aaron Rodgers, but certainly just the idea of, like, being able to throw to Justin Jefferson in his prime.
Yeah, I can see that.
There's got to be some appeal, right?
Yeah, I would think so. Devin from Dover, going back to Jaire Alexander, says, an injured corner? The Titans are all over that. Trevor says one of Treylon Burks' three good plays came against Jaire Alexander. That is true. He did have a very impressive catch on Jaire Alexander the night of the plane from Green Bay.
That's right.
Big night in Titans history.
That was. That turned out to be quite a line in the sand.
I would love to, you know, we talk about the A.J. Brown night, and certainly that was a big night for the organization. Like, go back to the night of the win in Lambeau Field against the Green Bay Packers, where the Titans were in first place, looked like all was well. And then tell Titans fans what basically has transpired from that point on. I don't think there's a single Titans fan that would believe you after that night.
Yeah, I forget the record right now, we were talking about at the end of last year, it's atrocious, but they were 7-3 after that win?
Correct.
Yeah, 7-3. And have won like a couple games since then.
Yeah, they've won
a couple games.
Just think about telling Titans fans, all right, you just won in Lambeau Field, primetime game, you're 7-3. This is going to be your record from here for the next 3 years. You're going to win like a total of like 11 games.
I got to go find my I'm going to punch up my Confident Athletic from that night at Lambeau. I remember Kevin Byard in the locker room after that game, and it, you know, he had every reason to feel this way. He was talking about like, yeah, the championship culture and all this stuff. Like, they were feeling real good about themselves after the game. They should have been, especially because it's like, the rookie, there he is. Yeah. Now you see it. My gosh, like nothing good's happened for them.
Really,
like
nothing
good.
Nothing at all.
Like, what did they do to deserve this?
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We got the Rob Rant coming up next. We'll have Corey Curtis from News 2 with us at 8 o'clock for his weekly visit. All that ahead. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Man, I was mad, huh?
Then he said he waited a minute. And he's like, yeah. But I thought he sent a picture.
He said he did. I've not got Tim. If you sent the picture, we have not seen it on our text line.
There's a secret flip off from a Tennessee player this year that no one knew about.
I mean, we all know about the Jordan Beck one. Like,
yeah,
that was
three years ago. Yes.
So I understand. We talked about that actually before that call this morning, and
we did.
Not a great moment from Jordan Beck. I understand that. But I don't know what that has to do with this year's team.
Also, someone on the text line, by the way, I don't know if you saw this, but they're like, SEC tournament is the postseason. No.
Sure.
Stop.
I mean, I guess technically they're right.
Yeah.
I don't think it's quite viewed that way.
The SEC tournament of the three things, the regular season, the NCAA tournament, and then the SEC tournament, it's third in importance, okay? So you can say it's the postseason, but get out of here.
All right, so there's more baseball things that have made me mad. They really have nothing to do with college baseball. Over the weekend, although I guess you could apply this in some cases, and I'm sure some Tennessee fans will, but we'll get to that here in just a second. So I want to set this up. The Cubs were playing against your beloved Tigers yesterday, and the Tigers, as we know.
And losing.
Just off to a wonderful start. Are they still the best team in baseball?
I believe so.
Okay. So
it's
playing
right
really
it's,
well.
It's close, yeah.
So Nico Horner, who plays for the Cubs, he took a fastball that was low and inside. And if you look, you know, the little K-zone they've got on all these broadcasts now, like, it was a big miss. And he gets rung up for strike three yesterday. And there's microphone footage of this where he turns around to the umpire as he's walking off after the strike three call. And he says, quote, "You're having a really bad day." That's all he said. He said, "You're having a really bad day." And the umpire immediately runs it. Just immediately gets thrown out of the game. And he's just like, "What are you doing? Like, all I said was you're having a bad day." Craig Counsell, the manager from the Cubs, comes running out there. And he's like, "Are you serious? Did you just throw him out for saying you had a bad day? Like, that's all he said?" And here's what Craig Counsell had to say in the aftermath of the game yesterday, the manager of Chicago Cubs. So that was Craig Counsell yesterday after the game. Joe, it's amazing to me that in the year 2025, a couple of things. Number one, if you look at it this year, and this has been a problem in college baseball, it's been a huge problem in the MLB, MLB too, and they're talking about it a lot in Major League Baseball. The amount of missed strike ball calls is crazy. And there's always, I understand this, it's baseball. There's umpires. There's always been a level of a human element to it which if you ask a purist, a baseball traditionalist, they love that part of it. To me, it's kind of amazing that we're in 2025 and we can have this wide of a variance on the strike zone with some of these umpires and the inconsistency level that we have. So there's one thing. It's also like these umpires in Major League Baseball and the egos that they have where they think that they just run the entire show and people, I guess, are there to see them, and you throw somebody out of the game for saying, hey, you're having a bad day. Like, to me, that is so soft and needs to be reprimanded by Major League Baseball. You cannot have umpires that have zero thick skin whatsoever. Like, frankly, these umpires get paid a lot of money. To me, it needs to be like borderline putting your hands on an umpire before you get thrown out ever, ever. That's just me. I know some people disagree with that, and I can get there. Like, if you're just absolutely berating an umpire and cussing him out right in his face, like, there's only so much of that I expect somebody to put up with before you get tossed. That part of it I understand. Like, to me, throwing somebody out for saying you're having a really bad day is like a suspendable offense for that umpire. I hope Major League Baseball takes action to it. It's 2025. We talked earlier in the show about some things that get said out there in other sports and some of the things that some of these other officials have to put up with. Major League Baseball umpires are unbelievably soft. They get paid a lot of money. Get some thicker skin. Nobody wants to see you throwing players out for saying, quote, you're having a really bad day. That's all he said.
It's almost like because it was so subtle, it was like it caught him off guard. He's ready for someone to like fart bomb him.
Yeah.
And instead it's like, man, you're having a really bad day. But it is.
That's the thing. Like, he didn't even yell. Like, he's like walking out of the batter's box. And he's like, you're having a really bad day. And immediately tosses him. I couldn't believe it when I heard the audio.
That's extremely weak. Yo, you talk about other sports. Paul Maurice, who we all agree is like an awesome guy. Like, he just was – I forget even what the call was, but he was just sitting there, fart you! Fart you! Yeah. Just yelling it at the officials. Like, they absolutely know what he was saying and could hear it and could read his lips.
It's
and
he's every
just
night
over and
in
over
the NHL.
Screaming it at them.
Like, if they left the can- – it's not, and it's not just Brunette. It's every coach. And Maurice is – probably a big offender of it, but like leave the camera on a coach and an NHL bench on every night, you'll get like 10 of those. Yeah. It happens all the time in the NHL, which again, like if you want to debate whether or not that's acceptable behavior, that's fine. We can have that debate. But the bottom line is it's pro sports and it happens. And if you get to this level of officiating, you should have some thicker skin to be able to kind of deal with that. And the thing about the NHL refs is they'll give it right back to them. Like they'll go right back at them and say that. Like, but still in the NHL, to get kicked out of a game, you got to do something pretty egregious.
Yeah.
And the line for this in Major League Baseball is way too small. Way too small.
Yeah, MLB umpires seem – and look, I guess you can take it to – well, we were talking earlier about Cannon Peebles in Tennessee and then the sort of the double standard that happened at Arkansas. So maybe it's just baseball?
Maybe.
But I do feel like MLB, some of those guys are way
it's
overboard.
Way overboard.
Like they, some of those guys, to me, it's like they take it to the second, third level.
They escalate.
Like this. Yeah. And that's just not what you're supposed to be doing.
No.
So this is all goes into officiating accountability, public accountability, which should be there. And not only should they be disciplined, we should know about it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And look. You know, this goes back to the Tennessee Arkansas stuff over the weekend, like with the barking back and forth at each other. Honestly, I really don't have much of a problem with that. Like, I saw a lot of Tennessee fans wishing that, you know, the Arkansas kid got kicked out of the game. And I was like, why? Like,
well, it's just because Peebles did, though.
Yeah,
right?
But like, it's like you kind of love that about your team. You can't complain about it when somebody else is doing it to you. Like, I would love to know what Peebles said. Because unless it was unbelievably egregious, don't kick him out of the game. Like, there's too much kicking out of the game that happens in baseball relative to all these other sports.
Yeah, like the Drew Gilbert thing from 3 years ago. I mean, I think he said that's farting awful, right, to the ump on a ball on a strike call. I mean,
and in college, I have a little bit more sympathy for the college part of that.
Yeah, like it's not smart to do that. And look, that team in particular was. You know,
oh yeah,
everybody was on high alert for that team. But, yeah, what did people say? It's all inconsistent. But the bottom line is that's a huge – that's a big consequence.
Yeah. I mean, nobody was stopping your beloved Detroit Tigers. We know that. It's not going to make a difference in the game itself.
That's right.
But that's right. Council was beside himself with anger.
Two L's in Council. Take that L. Take another one, Council.
Some of that. 615-737-1025. Is our phone number. Corey Curtis from News 2 will be with us coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.